Okay. Yeah. Is it working? Well, thank you so much. It's a very moving moment for me to be here to speak about Ernest Mnangagwa, who's been my obsession. Some people would say love in the last few months, maybe more. And to speak about Ernest, I'm sorry, I've grown a relationship with him, so I talk to him with him, his first name. I'm sorry for that, but I can't. I know it will happen again. In South Africa, which was a very difficult space in his life, I think, in his story, in the way he engaged or disengaged with the notion of home. So it's a very special moment, and I thank everybody here for inviting me to talk about my little attempt to exhibit an extremely complex, an extremely someone so complex, someone so subtle, and you need to be a very hardcore researcher, and you need to be very, very sensitive, because I think it's a work in life that can be manipulated in many ways, politically and artistically, and there are many layers in between also. So what I could say, and I'm really sorry, but 30 minutes, you're really asking me the impossible. And I'm really sorry because I know it's too short. And when I had to tour the exhibition many times, and to the point where I, at the beginning, it was because I felt the show was too invisible and that I had a duty to make it more visible for Ernest, who was erased for so long, especially in France. But then I realized that probably it was part of the story I was taken in, and that somehow the storytelling and the fact that I had to do all these tours was also part of the exhibition itself. But no, just to say that the shortest tour I ever gave was an hour, and that was really for the lucky ones. So I'm really sorry. It's really a very big challenge for me. What I can say, and I'm sorry, it's not a very straightforward presentation, because that's also part of the way I worked, and the way also I had to work, because I had to engage with a not only very complex story, many countries and many places and not so many works, but many lost works, but also because I was lucky enough to live and to experience something that maybe happens only once in a lifetime, which is to access archives, as Dorte mentioned, that were also supposedly lost. So actually, when I started engaging with Ernest, I really thought that I was engaging with, you know, this story with so many holes and so many question marks. And of course, there are many question marks, but suddenly, slowly, I also realized that I was actually dealing with an overwhelming amount of material. Which is also somehow a way to, you know, to get lost, because it's so, I mean, I don't know, it's I have maybe 3,000 images of archives and 150 hours of sound recordings. And so this is part of, I embrace that complexity and that sense of being overwhelmed. And this presentation is also the result of that. And that's how I engaged with Ernest. And I think it's part of also what is embedded in his practice is disorientation. That's also how he's so difficult to look at, and he's so difficult to exhibit, and he's so difficult to maybe it's so difficult to make him so visible. And the paradoxical thing is that he disorientates us, but even though he's striving, and he's striving very, very deeply and very strongly to reach some kind of essence, what I would call maybe the skeleton of the spirit, which is the name of the last sculpture of Sonia. And again, Sonia and Wonga, the Mankoba family for me is one, is a trinity and is one thing. So I will also mention them together all the time. And I'm sorry for that, but it's part of my mind situation now. What I would call also some kind of bone paintings or bone drawings. There's this sense of hyper-consistency in Ernest's work and life, hyper-concentration, and it's true that one of you mentioned Beckett and this idea of maybe this concentrism, this idea of reaching this kind of the most minimal and the most total image with the fewest gestures. What I would start with maybe is to say that yesterday we spoke about maybe the diversity of Ernest's practice, but what I felt on my side is that there was a very strong consistency between all these works, and actually that was one of the biggest curatorial challenges I had, was actually how can I show a practice which is for me some kind of an ongoing image, and how can I give a sense of this ongoing process which is at work, and at the same time, how can I articulate, of course, the different moments of life, and of course, the different forms that this process, used throughout the years. But for me, Ernest is a conceptual artist, and Ernest, there's this beautiful quote, that I got from the audio recordings. Someone asked him why he wanted to be a journalist. I don't think it was a Wonga question, or maybe it was. And he says, "I wanted to speak and to express what my mother told me, to tell the world what Africa thinks." And I think that this idea of language is everywhere throughout the practice of Ernest. When I look at the Bantu Madonna, I feel he's trying to find the synthesis between African and Western worlds, and I feel also he wants to say something. It's very melancholy, but there is a political statement in that work. And of course, it's even more obvious, of course, in the last works, but I feel like these works, which are the very, very last works he starts making in the 80s, It's a life, it's 80 years of life meditating upon what I call the language of the invisible. So of course you move from this idea of wanting to be a journalist, speaking up, and he's speaking up in his life everywhere he can, even when he's interned, to the idea of translating that language and adding this layer of spirituality also to get to that extraordinary, to the extraordinary last works, which are really the most minimal expressions of that language of the invisible. So I must also apologize because I quote Ernest all the time, and sometimes also I forget to say that it's Ernest speaking. But it's a way for me to introduce, the most important thing, the most striking was to engage with this incredible content. So what I can say in a very short time is that most of all, I tried to understand why I became so obsessed with Ernest and so much in love. And I think it's because Ernest is asking me so many questions all the time, and I feel I found a few answers. I found it's an attempt. And I really hope it's a window. That's also why I wanted to use that image, because this is an image that was stuck in my mind and consciously throughout the preparation of this exhibition. And I found it at Elsa Miles and the Guru. And I don't know, because I think somehow I had dreamt of this idea of Ernest's work being some kind of a window. And in a way, what I feel as a curator is not about delivering any kind of authority, and that's also why I speak that way. but more just opening windows. And I hope this show is just a window onto many other windows and many other shows, because Ernest is a very complex and needs to be addressed in so many ways. And Ernest actually forces us to be in a situation of dialogue. So that was kind of a very important image. It was an important image for me also. I don't know what's the story of that picture. Actually, I didn't even ask Elsa. But for me, it also translated my first very, very harsh difficulty when I thought about exhibiting Ernest. Was somehow it was impossible for me to see the works in the exhibition space. I felt that they were so deep and so invested with spirituality that I felt I didn't know if it would be possible to showcase them in a white cube in a museum in Paris. I felt they also belonged to a different kind of realm now. And so it was difficult for me to think about showing them and delivering them like this in a museum space. So it was kind of an important image for me to work with throughout the exhibition, which finally happened, and I can reassure you there were some works inside the show. So the questions that that Ernest asked me, or that I asked myself, I was asking myself, like, I've never seen such consistency. How can art and life be mingled to that level? How can politics and spirituality be brought together to that level? How can you survive 100 years when you go through what Ernest went through? How can you live so much time isolated and even choose isolation? With no sense of home, with no sense of even what Kamang Walihulere calls the faraway place. And I wanted to quote this because this is actually the starting point of the whole exhibition, was the acquisition of the film Kamang made out of the Obrist interview. That's how I learned that Sonia's exhibition was getting prepared and that maybe there was an opportunity to show Ernest at the Pompidou for the first time. And actually, I wanted to say something about home here, because this is one thing I feel I've understood. Is that somehow both Ernest and Sonia had no home anymore. They were in exile. And I found this extraordinary excerpt from the audio recordings where Ernest mentions how he met Sonia. And I'm just going to read it. When I first visited her atelier, I saw the courageous effort which her sculpture stood up. It at once struck me that those sculptures were a tentative to seek a new way out of our crisis. I feel spiritually in agreement. Whatever figure sculpture I see, I feel convinced, and I believe in the expression I see, and I feel at home. She has dared to question the unquestionable. It gets a new language, meaningful. So what I felt somehow throughout the preparation of the show was also that probably the Mankoba's works were their home. And what kept Ernest going throughout the difficulties of his life was probably also to find his own space and his own grounding in his own works. And maybe that's also why they're so driven by this center. So my challenge, my personal challenge is to exhibit that work. So how can I engage with the spiritual in a museum, in a white cube? How to show this ongoing image, this sense of unity and reconciliation, which was so much at stake in Ernest's work, and how to show that and at the same time articulate the different chapters and moments of his life. How to articulate also the notion of invisibility, because Ernest had been erased, had been invisible, He was erased because he was a black man, that's a fact. He was erased from Cobra. He had to leave South Africa because he was a black man. I mean, and all these things. But he also lived in isolation, but he also chose invisibility in the sense that he chose to engage with the invisible. So how to articulate with those different, how to articulate these different levels of the invisible in his life and work. How can you also divide a family, which is like a trinity, as I said? So how, for me, it was impossible to exclude Sonia and Wonga from the exhibition. So Wonga is sometimes, yeah, he's the keeper of the word. He's the one who's translating, he's in the family, he's the one carrying the words of Ernest and Sonia. He's the one translating, so there were so many quotes of Wonga. He was kind of the keeper of the word somehow in the exhibition. And Sonia was also present with a few sculptures that I chose. So of course there were so many beautiful Sonia sculptures in the other space, in the Sonia exhibition, but there were a very few discreet sculptures that I chose to also respond to Ernest's sculptures. So how can you also, and then there were all the questions around Cobra that we also already discussed, but I feel Ernest is Cobra before Cobra, even though he was never part of Cobra, as you know. So what are the temporary answers that I found to kind of to exhibit Ernest? First of all, I wanted to read this because this is also one of the starting points in terms of the words for the exhibition for me. So it's the answer Ernest gives to Obrist when Obrist asks him why his work has been erased. And he says, some people have asked why I did not produce more works during my life than I have. One may well suppose it is due to difficult material conditions or certain natural indispositions in me, but the fundamental reason is that I only paint or carve when a spirit calls on me. So in a certain way, because of its lack of material weight, my expression has remained for a long time out of the attention of art critics and historians and is mostly absent from the so-called art market. I do not regret that, because my hope has always been to convey the vision or evocation as discreetly as I could with the least material means possible. My belief is that once the idea is there, whether the message is heard or not, will never depend upon the intensity of the voice, but on the intrinsic coherence, the inner pertinence, and the human urgency of what is said. So the first thing, of the exhibition, so that's the outside wall, is the title, which you cannot read here, but the show is called I Shall Dance in a Different Society. It was important, it was a statement for me because it's actually a quote I got from one of the diaries of Ernest, which I transcribed, of when he arrives in Paris in 38, and I think we mentioned that yesterday, the Negro Ball. I don't know who mentioned that, I forgot. And so he's taken by a friend to the Negro Ball because he was, of course, a black man, and his friend drags him to the dance floor, and Ernest replies, "No, I shall dance in a different society." And for me, it was important to, it was a statement because I think Ernest's work is about dance. So he never danced in his life. And there's another anecdote, which I also mentioned to someone here, about a Cobra party that I got also from the audio, where this Cobra lady was throwing a party and everybody was dancing. And Ernest was observing, as always, and this woman comes to Ernest and it's like, "Ernest, you're not dancing. You should be showing the way." It's kind of related to that as well. So yeah, I think Sonia and Ernest meditated upon a different society they couldn't actually never experience. So that's why they also remained so isolated. But they definitely embedded a different type of society in their works. And I think that's also why it was so important for me to translate this idea of unity within the exhibition, so that the works, and especially this kind of ongoing central figure that you see from the 50s until his death, are like an ongoing dance. So that was a direct response to the title. And later we also had a beautiful intervention of Kitsolin Leliot, who's also present here today, and I thank her for being here, who also responded to the title and tried to create and to perform this dance in a different society that the Mancobas kind of looked for. So the first thing I tried to do was to create a threshold, because as I told you, I could not really see, I could not see myself delivering the works right away. So there was this kind of threshold where you were welcomed by this stick, which is a very very special object. It's an object that was given to Ernest by medicine men, and in South Africa, and for him, for me, it was some kind of a way to embody Ernest's spirit, and it's kind of an object he kept throughout his life. And when he came back to South Africa in '94, he brought it on the plane with him and broke it, even because it was too long. And he would never, you know, leave it away from him. So it was for me this way of being facing the spirit. And of course, he also speaks about the medicine man, and those medicine men asked him about his sculptures, and he speaks about healing. Of course, this is a healing stick, and he says that in Africa people are healing, and also artists are not just there to deliver artworks, but they're there because they have a social responsibility towards society, and there's this sense of that is already embedded in that stick. And the other thing was Ernest's voice. So you have the audio here, but it was very important for me because also Ernest's voice kind of guided me throughout the exhibition making, so that people could really engage with his voice. The way he speaks, the way he paints, all these things are really always operating in the same way. So the voice of Ernest is also a way to kind of take you into a very political moment as well as a very spiritual one. So for me, it was really important to create that kind of threshold before you entered the show. So on the one hand, I created this kind of, I had to deal with another challenge, which was, as I told you, I feel Ernest's practice is very much connected to language and writing. So how to articulate, you know, this idea that he wanted to be a journalist, that he was speaking up, that he was, you know, writing so many articles, and even when he's interned, he's writing letters, and he's also kind of making political statements under this kind of very harsh moment of history. So how to articulate this kind of statement around, you know, black education. I mean, there are many things, many topics, and it's kind of a different conference to do, but many, many issues he addressed, and of course his life, which is also an odyssey. Maybe I can just read this because it's also very, very important, if I find it. Yeah, so it's when Wonga starts writing the memoirs of Ernest, I found this little statement. Actually, he's saying it. He says, "The book should be called A Man of Africa. It's not ordinary memoirs. It is a kind of initiation of being an artist. The adventure it was in the conditions that were yours. An initiation to politics, although you were not a politician, but you've been on the border of it. And it is a meditation and a reflection on what is politics, and then there is the spiritual, you, the man of the spirit. Your life becomes an initiation to the many aspects of life, a kind of odyssey, ars politica, and an experience of flesh and blood, impossible à raconter, which means it's impossible to tell." So that's the first room where you got kind of a very long wall with this kind of life odyssey, which is 100 years And then two walls, one was engaging with this invisibility issue that I already mentioned, and another one was really dealing with the two nicknames he got, and Gongoniana, the bird of the spirit, so that's the man of the spirit, and Stereo, which was the nickname he got at Fort Hare because he was always fighting stereotypes. Great Nathan and Stereo. And there was also a lot of vitrine and material things and archives, and there was this vitrine to Elsa Miles, because as I told you, this show wouldn't have been possible if she hadn't started the research. And it was, so I did this little vitrine with a, which was a tribute to Elsa, and I also showed, she was also even drawing the paintings of Ernest, so it was a very intimate material and very beautiful. This is one of my favorite pictures of Ernest, man of the spirit. And this is a picture where you see the contemporary also inputs. So the idea was not so much to engage with contemporary artists for the sake of it, but I think Ernest's vision and one of the things he fought for was the idea of the artist having the social responsibility and the idea of transmission. So for me, giving a sense of legacy was a very, very important thing. And as one of the artists also said to me, which was a very beautiful, so I'm quoting her, Myriam Mindou, she's from France and Gabon, so she really related to the Kota, even though like Ernest, you would never say she engaged with Kota, because that's not, her practice is also layered and kind of many embedded in many different languages. But she told me, yeah, we never get to see our sources, and Ernest is one of them. So it was the idea of like showing the source and showing also what where the source took and how Ernest also talked to young to different types of generation and from different places. So I have no time to dive into this, unfortunately. So just to give you a sense of being, what it means being drowned, this is a sketch of the of Ernest's memoirs by Wonga, and this is just a little part of the archives I had to deal with. And yeah, this is maybe 0.001% of the pictures I have, but just to give you a sense of what it was. This was an incredible vitrine also with very precious material. So there is the, this is when Ernest was interned, so it was a very emotional thing. And of course, like this is the diary when he was interned in a camp, so it was right written very small. And even before the exhibition started, I found this very tiny article when he was in Hattingen, and he was fighting German politics because the Germans he considered the Germans the British were speaking badly about Benin, and so he was, just to tell you, he was always speaking up. And the history, the philosophy book, Dorte already mentioned. So that's the overall idea. So the idea was not so much to do an archival room, but more to create a literary space. So that's kind of the sketch for the book to come. So it's going to come, and it's going to be published next summer, I think. So you see the life and Gongoniana and Stereo and the invisibility side, but it's more the sense of it's you were overwhelmed, but it was not meant to be a kind of a didactic thing. It was like more engaging with Ernest, you need to be engaged physically, and you need to take, your time, because it's a very long life, and it's a very heavy narrative, and it's many layers of writings and artworks. And then you had the Kemang's film, which was, I think, a beautiful transition between this language space of Ernest's writings and all, and taking you to, because I think the film takes you from Ernest speaking to the idea of how language translates in his artworks. And then you were taken into the exhibition. So I'm just showing a few pictures because there's no time. But just to give you a sense of what I meant with this idea of unity, so at the center of the space, you had this kind of round platform where I created the Trinity. So there are many codes in the show, but the three, so this is the Bantu Madonna, this is the Madonna belonging to the novel, and this is one of the last sculptures of Sonia. And the Trinity is, of course, a tribute to Ernest, Sonia, and Wonga. And the circle is also like this idea of totality and unity that Ernest kind of was looking, was striving towards. And throughout and around the platform, you had all these, this kind of circle of central figure images. And that was the sense of dance that I was mentioning earlier. And from that central section, you had the different chapters that were radiating. So that's the solution I found to kind of give a sense of these tensions. And the first, one of the other things that I found throughout the preparation of the show, so I did a very bad thing last night because I was showing to some people the back of that painting, and it's not on the right side now. But I discovered some of the works were painted both sides. And so it was an interesting thing for me because I realized, for me, it was a way to understand that Ernest, what you see with Ernest's work is also in a dialogue with something that you don't see. And so we found a solution with the sonographer to show some of the backs, which was really kind of windows. And the most beautiful thing was, of course, for Lancette, the fact that Ernest gave a title, and you know he gave that title when he knew that the work would come back to South Africa. But he gave the title of Lancette, just not the ancestor, because Ernest is never giving you what you can understand. But that was very beautiful to kind of access this idea of the secret and the revelation of the painting. And from there, that was the first section dealing. So each section had a thematic entry, but then would also be in a dialogue with specific moments of his life. So this is the first section I called Paint As You Feel, which is what Ernest says to Sekoto when they're in the Transvaal in the 30s, looking at Van Gogh lithographs. And it engages with Ernest's relationship to color, mostly to the Cobra years, to what I wouldn't call abstraction, because I think maybe these are maybe the only two abstract paintings of Ernest. I'm not even sure they're abstract. I think Ernest cannot afford to be abstract. He wants to say something. And when he mentions that, he mentions Freud at some point saying that, yes, you have to dive into yourself and to reach what he calls the innermost, because there's no balance with Ernest and Sonia. It's always extreme. And the innermost, but not to look at your little fantasies about whatever, but just to bring what society doesn't want to see. So there's always something, stronger than just going into it or up. So that's the first section. I know I have no time. I know, yeah. So maybe just to finish yes. Yeah. So the second chapter was, I called the spirit over matter, because the dialogue between spirit and matter was very much at stake also with Sonia, but this idea that Ernest was really fighting for the artist as a shaman, and the idea of art being reconciled with spirituality, that's why he loved Duchamp, and that's why this section was kind of looking at his relationship to African art, but not only, to also Renaissance, to what this kind of pre-modern representations, this was the idea. So there are many things I cannot say, so I'm just going very fast. And this is a section called survival art. So the idea of like what I called earlier the bone painting. So this is relating to the ink drawings of the 60s, which are very, very minimal, and for me the most extraordinary works of Ernest. And they loved, both of them, they loved the Inuit objects they admired in Copenhagen, and this idea of like this very small like fish bones that would contain the whole spirit of the Inuit, the resistance of these people. And I think that's what Ernest and Sonia kind of looked for, and this is the skeleton of the spirit I mentioned. And this is another section, which is almost the last. I called it Alphabets for Searching Souls, which is a formula, a sentence of Wonga. And it's really dedicated to the late works, this idea of the language of the invisible I already spoke about, which was very important for me, is that I feel that was the only moment just before he died that he was really ready to kind of fill the walls, because Ernest's practice is very small. But suddenly with this language, it feels like I wanted to give that feeling of like being, you know, this idea that suddenly he finds something that could cover like kilometers of space. And the last section, I called it Regain Something Lost, and that's something I realized and I understood very, very late, even throughout the exhibition itself, was in a way Ernest was a very romantic artist, and he mentions Mozart and Shakespeare, and he says that when he listens to Mozart, there are also names from South Africa that come back, and that he's there and he's an artist because he feels like he has to regain something that had been lost. And what had been lost is not only, you know, his South Africa because he was in exile, but probably his own heritage. He never accessed to because, of course, he grew up in colonized South Africa. It was a space I called also, so it was kind of a memory chamber, that's why it was black also. And I also included the beautiful Kamang piece from this collection, which was a very deep meditation on this kind of language that had been lost that I just mentioned. And it was a lot of lithographs, because I think the lithographs are the space where the negative and the positive are in a very strong and deep dialogue. Maybe I can just read this last sentence of Ernest to finish. It's a figure I have seen either directly, or it may also have come out of my dreams, and the inspiration that the land of my forefathers has awoken in my heart in a way that I'm not clearly aware of. It may well be, as it has been suggested, that some particular sculpture was at the origin, but I do not remember. So I think, in a way, engaging with Ernest is engaging with this "I do not remember." So that's probably what I can say, because there's no the space. But sorry. this is actually because I had very like I always did a tour in a very specific way. Like I had my own initiatory path, and this is kind of my favorite view of the exhibition. So I'm just sharing that with you.
Yeah, yes. I'll leave it up.